I have to make a couple of disclosures before I describe this work. The first one is that the first author is actually, the first eight authors on the paper.
Excuse me, Gaylord. Excuse me, I got to put this on.
Just a quick announcement. To the third speaker, can you please come here to our weather? Thanks.
All right. Let's recover from that error and start over again. So I have to disclose, the first eight authors have actually spent most of the last 10 years of their life building this system. My involvement has been very limited to the last 2 years, and so I'm going to use two pronouns very, very carefully. When I use the word we, as in we built this system, I mean the first eight authors on the paper. Okay? And when I use the word I, as in I have no idea, that means I, Galen Hunt, have no idea. But the other eight authors probably actually have a very good response. Okay? All right. I also need to make a couple of other revelations, let's call them, or disclosures. Socrates bugs. Even shipping software has bugs. Even Microsoft shipping software has bugs. I know. Get yourselves up on the floor. Okay. Oh, and by the way, so does your hardware. And we're going to come back to that point toward the end of the talk. Okay. So I want to put a couple of definitions for you so we're really clear about what we're talking about. A bug is a flawed program logic. So for example, my little program here that says my var to 5 didn't realize that my var is actually a macro that randomly generates an address. Okay, that's a bug. And yes, bugs like that do actually appear in code. And an error is a failed execution that was caused by the bug. So a given error, if I run a program 5,000 times that has this bug, it may generate 5,000 errors. Okay? So one bug causes, may cause many, many errors. And we'll get to some very large numbers very quickly. So the challenge is Microsoft ships software to approximately a billion users. And well, when something goes wrong, when somebody hits one of our bugs, how do we find out when things actually do go wrong? Well, we want to fix all the bugs, regardless of their source, whether it's the application or the operating system, whether it's in software or hardware or possibly malware. We also want to prioritize the bugs that affect the most users. So if many, many users are hitting a bug, that's the one that we care about fixing first. And we also want to generalize the solution so that it can be used by any program, inside or outside of Microsoft. Now, what kind of bugs do we want to fix? Well, all of them, okay? We want to fix crashes, kernel crashes, in other words, blue screens of death. We want to fix application crashes, installation failures, even invariant violations within programs. Okay? Anything that's a bad event, we'd like to put it into it. So the system we built is called Windows Error Reporting. And I suspect most of you have actually seen it in operation. Okay? You've probably seen one of these two dialogues. What I'm going to tell you about today is what's behind the dialogues and what happens after you click yes, send error report. Okay, what about the numbers? Let's introduce them differently. The system has collected billions of error reports, application, operating system, and hardware error-related error reports. We have a billion installed clients. The system, the server backend service is provisioned to handle over 100 million error reports today. It's over-provisioned specifically so that we can tolerate global correlated events like MERS. The system has collected error reports from over 17 million programs. Basically, if your program has ever run on Windows, the odds are we've got an error report for you. It's been used by over 700 companies outside of Microsoft. The system is about 60, the backend system is about 60 servers, and it scales so well that we actually only have two servers record every error that occurs on every Windows machine everywhere in the world. Okay? And it's been in use for 10 years. And lastly, the number one. How many programmers does it require to get access to Word data? Just one. Literally anybody in this audience can get access to Word data if you're a program. Okay? So I've given you a brief introduction. Now I'm going to talk about how we actually go about processing dealing with your reports and making sense of them. Then I'm going to give you talk about some of the experiences over the last 10 years, finding and correcting bugs in software, hardware, and in malware, and then I'll stop talking. So let's put Word in context. Let's talk about debugging in the very small. So all of you in this room, I suspect, have all read a program, and you've given it to a user, and the user hit a bug and reported that bug to you. Okay? And then you say reproduce the error, or maybe you attach to a debugger up to the user's program to figure out what's going on. You gave them a fix and life is wonderful. Okay? Well, now imagine your problem's a little bit harder. Imagine you shift your program to say a few hundred million users. And one of them gets a bug, what happens? Well, particularly what happened before we had Word, and what I suspect happens in most organizations these days, is that the user calls technical report, some support technician tries to diagnose the error, and then, in our case, the support technicians would meet with the programmers approximately once a year and say, here are the top 10 errors that we see users hitting. And by the way, they thought like one of the top errors was that users were editing binaries. I thought that was the number three, like number three most likely error. Don't ask me where they got that. Well, okay, so the problem with this is the human bottleneck. Okay, so first of all, you can't hire enough technicians to answer the telephone. Okay? The data you get is inaccurate, both what you get from the users and what you get from the technicians. It's hard to get additional data when you need it. You have no global baseline. You have no idea actually how many people are encountering an error. And it's useless for Heisenberg, because you can't get them back on the telephone the next time the error happens, because it probably happens to some completely different user. So fundamentally, what we need to do is remove the humans from the loop. And that was our goal. So our goal was to build a data collection system that would allow one service to record every error, application, operating system, hardware, on every Windows system worldwide. And what we believed is that if we could measure these things, we could fix them. Okay? Now, I'm going to ground this a little bit with an example. Let's say somebody in this audience wrote a plugin for Outlook, okay? And it happened to contain this function that has a bug that if, takes two parameters, and if the first parameter happens to be odd, then it randomly generates an address and writes a word into that address, okay? And they ship this out to millions of customers. Well, what happens with Word is when that program writes to an invalid address and crashes the program, we collect what we call a mini-dump. Okay? It consists of the stack of the thread that encountered the error and some additional, a very small amount of additional data from in that process. And then we ask the user, is it okay if we report this error to Microsoft? The user says yes. We send the mini-dump up to the servers of Microsoft. And then on the servers, program is called Bang Analyze that takes every single one of those mini dumps and runs through it, and what it attempts to do is determine what is the root cause, and then it classifies errors into what we call buckets. A bucket is a collection of error reports that are likely to have originated from the same bug. Okay? And it keeps track of how many hits there were on each one of these buckets. Okay? And the programmers can use that to prioritize what they fix. Now, the heart of the system is this Bang Analyze tool. Bang Analyze is an extension to the debugging tools for Windows. You can actually go download it right now and run it on your own desktop on your own private crash if you want. It takes an input a mini dump and an output is a bucket ID. And it runs on all of our worst servers. And then and Bang Analyze has approximately 500 heuristics. It grows at a rate of roughly one heuristic per week. And we do rerun it on data. Okay, so to recap what I told you. Well, so the client collects a mini dump automatically without any interaction from the programmer, purely because the system program happens to be running on Windows. It sends a mini dump to the servers. They analyze buckets of the error with similar reports. It increments the bucket count, and then the programmers prioritize the buckets with the highest counts. Those are the most able to do. Now, actually, it doesn't quite work like this. Okay, does it work like that? It wouldn't scale. It actually works. One of the things it does is it only uploads the first few mini dumps for the first few hits on a bucket. After that, it just increments the count. Okay? In addition, quite often you need additional data beyond what's needed in a mini dump. So you need a full memory dump, you might need dumps from other processes. And programmers can request that this additional data be collected in future hits on the same error report. Okay? Now, the system scales because we actually deploy a two-phase bucketing strategy. We do a first step of bucketing called labeling that happens actually on the client based on immediate data of where the failure is, the observation point. And so, for example, the bucket ID might turn out to be alphabetic, flooding with flooding.dll version 1.0.2305 at offset 23F5 inside the program. Okay, and that's a generic mechanism that's used to create that first failure point. Then, once the mini dump reaches the servers, we use Bing Analyze to rebucket and as we move towards the root cause. And as we gain additional data, we keep rebucketing the error reports. And so, for example, one of the first things we'll do is we'll go look and see, do we have debugging symbols for this process? And if we do, we can figure out whether this offset 23F5 actually is within the memcopy routine. Okay, so that brings us one step closer. Then we can employ some of our statistical debugging techniques. And one of those is that we know that memcopy actually doesn't have very many bugs in it, but it typically is the colors of memcopy. And so then we replace the ID and move to a new bucket ID, which is the method through within plugin.dll running within alphabet.exe. And then we have more and more heuristics we plug. The paper has significantly more detail on the bucketing heuristics, and that's as far as I'm going to take them right now. Now, bucketing mostly works. As I said, these are heuristics. And in fact, bucketing can fail in one of two ways. The first way is that one bug, which is generating many error reports, those error reports can hit multiple buckets. Okay, so imagine that to illustrate this example, the memcopy example I showed, you can think of two primary failure cases. One of them is that the random address that is chosen is an invalid, is unmapped memory. Okay, in which case we immediately set fault within memcopy. The other case is where it picks an address inside the data section's program. And so it's going to randomly scribble over some piece of data within the process. And at some point in the future, the process is going to fail. It may actually fail in many, many different ways. And so those other ways will result in additional buckets. And that happens approximately, we believe, as much as 40% of all error reports get bucketed in buckets. This causes extra server load. It also means that when we go to debug these duplicate buckets, that we have to hand triage. Okay? The other way that failures can occur, can happen, is when we have multiple buckets hit within multiple bugs hit within one bucket. Again, hard to isolate. Now, you might be sitting here saying, how can a system that gets 44% of its error reports in the wrong place possibly work? Well, the answer is, scale is our friend. When you have billions of error reports, throw away a few hundred thousand here, throw away a few hundred million there, it doesn't really matter. You still got enough to debug. Okay? So now I want to talk about some of the experiences, some kind of the highlights over the last 10 years of using the system. First one, one question you might ask is, well, what do when I get all these error reports, what does it look like? Well, the first thing you do is you put it in the graph. And what you see is the bucket hits for a given program look like trade curves. Okay. In this case, this was a relatively small deployment. It was an internal deployment of Microsoft Word 2010 inside Microsoft to 9,000 users over a period of just 3 weeks. And one of the things you'll notice that's common across almost on all programs and all bug distributions is that a very small number of buckets, a very small number of bugs, make up the vast majority of the errors that are actually reported. Okay, in this case, just 20 buckets, presumably 20, in this case actually it was fewer than 20 bugs, I think it was 17, accounted for over 50% of the error reports. Well, that's good news. Okay? What that means is programmers, if you will watch the data and go fix a small number of bugs, that's one of the most important, you will impact and improve the lives of many, many of your users. Okay. We've used the system widely. One of the early success stories was when with the very first deployment of work, we found Heisenberg bugs literally within months of the system being out. We found Heisenberg bugs that existed in the Windows kernel and some of the other Windows kernel components that had been in there since the system started, but we'd never had enough error reports, never been able to diagnose them, and suddenly we could. Another example, we had a third-party antivirus vendor who accounted for 7.6% of all Windows crashes worldwide. Okay, this is a common story, unfortunately. And we went to them and said, hey, we have this Word data, you should fix your problems. They fixed their top 20 buckets in a period of 30 days. Within roughly about 4 months, Their percentage of all kernel crashes has gone from 7.6% to a manageable 3.6%. Now, and the other thing is, well, you can fix your bugs too. Like I said, anyone in the world can get at the registers with Microsoft with a small number of clicks can get access to the bug reports for your program. And you're, I promise you, if you've got code, they're out there. Okay? Another example, we found not just software errors, but hardware errors as well. This particular case, this was a failure in a CPU. And I won't name the vendor, because I get shot if I did. But my co-authors, one of them said, here's the shoot if I did. But what we did is we found out a large number of error reports. When we did a statistics-based analysis of it, we realized that there was a large class of error reports for exactly the same revision, the exact same step of a particular processor. We went to the processor vendor and we said, we're not totally sure, but we believe you have a bug. And they looked at it and literally like within a day came back and said, yes, we actually knew that bug existed. We just didn't think it ever get hit, you know what? with their help, we released a workaround in Windows. And you can see very rapidly, within 2-3 days, the number of error reports coming in for that, those systems drop down very dramatically. Okay? Now, two important takeaways here. One of them is this thing that we built to detect softwares helped us find hardware errors. The second one is, you know, these guys could have known they had these bugs a long time before we went to them. They actually could have registered, they could have been downloading these error reports, and they could have fixed the bug before it affected as many users as it did. We actually use them as a poster child as we go out and recruit other hardware vendors. Okay? Other examples of hardware failures that we found a laptop in the system management BIOS of one particular laptop, we found a buffer overrun in Resume from Sleep. This was a really fun one because what they overwrote was the name of the vendor. it reminds me of what my junior high school teacher said, which is fools' names and fools' faces are often found in public places. Okay? Another example, we had a motherboard USB controller that only implemented 31 of 32 bits in DMA. I think we got those bits. Unfortunately, it was a high order bit. Okay. So it appeared on machines with more than 2 gigabytes RAM. This one was a fun one. We rapidly figured out who the vendor was because it was on the motherboard, and with statistical analysis, we found all these bugs were coming from the same chipsets. But we didn't know which component was failing. We passed around the dots around a number of people at Windows, and eventually somebody said, hey, I think that looks like a USB packet. And sure enough, it was. Okay. We found other failures related to overclocking, hard disk controllers that reset at unfavorable times, substandard memory, things like that. Okay. The last example I wanted to talk about was malware. So this was the Reno's malware in February 2007. This was it was actually a social engineering worm. It was a piece of email that said, hey, why don't you run me something? And people ran it. And as soon as the system was infected, it caused the explorer.exe, the Windows shell, to crash. And so the experience of this, if you had this on your system, it would come up, it would start to drive your desktop, and then immediately crash. And then it would just keep doing that over and over again. And there wasn't anything you could do about it, okay? Well, we immediately saw a spike. We saw these error reports coming in, millions of them in a matter of days. And we released a worm removal tool through Windows Update, okay? And the machines automatically fixed themselves. Everybody who had turned on automatic update automatically fixed itself. And the great thing here is that the machines were not hot. They were useless to the users because they just kept restarting the login, the shell. But as designed, Word was able to get the errors up to Microsoft. We were able to count it. We were able to figure out what the fix, how to remove this particular virus. It wasn't an exploit, other than a social engineering exploit, and push it down to machines without the users, even though the machines were unusable to the users. Other examples, Blaster. When Blaster came out, it accounted on day zero, accounted for 50% of all the error reports that we had that day. And Kirk called the Windows guys and said, you guys have a problem. And so the other takeaway, this is the system is architected. We have not changed the architecture of the server and the distributed system in the 10 years that it's been deployed, but it's trivially tolerated these global catastrophic events. Okay. Other things that we talked about in the paper, quite a bit more detail on the bucketing, quite a bit more detail on statistics-based debugging, also the progressive data collection and how it works. And finally, there's a whole section on changes that we've made to the operating system over time to make it easier for us to do this post-mortem debugging with Word. So in conclusion, Windows Error Reporting was the first post-mortem reporting system with automatic error diagnosis. It's the largest client-server system in the world by installs. It's helped over 700 companies, including Microsoft, fix thousands of bugs and billions of error reports. And it's really fundamentally changed the way software development works at Microsoft. Every single Microsoft product team now has ship goals based on their top ship goal is reduce our Word error reports by this percent. Okay? Really changed it to a very engineering, numerically driven engineering process. Or as one of the general managers said, it forced us to stop making bleep up. Okay. And finally, you know, just to come back, well, Word works because bugging mostly works, and that's actually an area where I think there's a lot of room, even with particularly in this community, maybe the PL community. To look at ways to improve the bugging. And we'd love to make data available to people that want to look at that. Thank you very much.
Sean Tosipin, UCLA and Master Data. Just a quick question. What about privacy? Do you guys try to anonymize anything? Minidub has my stack and my credit card number in it.
I don't know. No, actually, I do know the answer. We try not to collect. So one of the nice things is most privacy data ends up in the heap, not on the stack. Okay, and so by avoiding collecting the heap, we avoid collecting the privacy data here. We also do a bunch of data scrubbing, so for things we know about. So for example, we remove your SID, we remove your username, we remove things like that in the error reports we have. It's not in the paper, but I did an analysis in preparation for the paper where I scrubbed roughly a million error reports looking to see if they had strings that were the right format. And I had to write this code so carefully so that even the code never saw the strings. That might be social security numbers, employee identification numbers, credit card numbers, telephone numbers. Those were the ones I looked for. In 100,000 error reports, I found fewer than 10 possible matches of strings. So in theory, yes, we could be collecting error data. In practice, we don't believe we are. And we also, particularly at Microsoft, we put very strong employment conditions on how this data, even the error reports. Okay.
Peter Gismeyers, Northeastern. I noticed a large number of the cases you mentioned are errors due to malicious code. I'm wondering what lessons you can find here for how you could combine statistical analysis of data like that for intrusion detection. In other words, do you want to approach towards making the client itself more of a front line to detect and crash and cause incidents?
Yeah, so two-part answer. So one of them is we actually had a team of people at Microsoft that scrubbed the Word data fairly frequently looking for zero-day exploits. That is their job, is to use this data and try to find zero-day exploits. Because it turns out that worms and viruses are very buggy and they send error reports. The second thing is there was a philosophy in building the system that when things go right, there should be no overhead at all. Okay? The overheads that users pay for running Word are zero if they never hit an error report. And when they do hit an error report, they're very, very small. 90% of users, their error report doesn't get clouded anymore. It's just an increment of a bucket count. There's no more upload than a bucket item. And so, we could talk about doing things on the client, but we have avoided doing that because we don't want to use the paper's overheads.
Thank you. Hello, Brad Morris.
And I'll come back to you.
I like the work. I'm pretty reassured about the privacy concerns we're just talking about. I have two comment and a question. One is, it seems like other people who might have those concerns would be a lot more assuaged if you did a better job publishing that information to them. So I see a dialog box and I'm sending stuff to Microsoft. I'm not inclined to do that.
Yep.
And then sort of the follow-on question to that is, are you keeping track of how many people aren't sending problem reports? So you keep track of how many times you said no before you said yes?
Big Brother knows. So the answer is we have pretty good estimates of what our opt-in rate is because we have some other systems. We have a system called SWIM where we collect what's happening on correctly running the system and for customers that have opted into that. And it's a very explicit opt-in process. And that gives us a pretty good idea of what kind of opt-in rates we have. It's roughly about 40% for XP and about 80% for Vista. I guess at the end of the day, my answer about secure privacy, about people who are really, really concerned, is you can turn it off. You don't have to send us your error reports. And the great thing is, like, if half the world turned off their error reports, we'd still have enough to find.
It seems like you're doing good stuff, though, right? You're getting good things out of it.
Yes, yes.
It seems like it's awesome work.
So yeah.
You want to encourage people to use it, I guess.
Well, so I will say this. So I did this initial study. I didn't put it in the paper because I couldn't figure out how to write it in such a way that no one would try to misquote me. Okay? And when we figure out how to do that, we'll publish a paper, I promise.
Okay. Vikram Krishnaprasad from Cornell University. So does analyzing all these bugs tell you anything about common errors that programmers make, and can use that information to help the system to avoid these kind of bug patterns in the first place?
Check for null.
Yeah, as Kirk says, check for null is the most important bug. We actually have generated quite a few guidelines that fit into our internal development process. And we have, I know Vince Orgman has gone and given talks to people externally about, hey, look, these are the kind of fixes we'll fix.
That's next speaker.